Not gonna say it. Nobody should. I just got a very quizzical look from someone walking through the parking lot of my apartment. Didn't seem to upset her. She was just very quizzical about, like, what is this motherfucker doing? Which, you know, I cannot blame her. She's not in the wrong there. She's not in the wrong to be like, what is this asshole doing with, like, a full-on microphone in the car? See a cat crossing the road, like, two blocks ahead. Just kind of slowly making its way across. Making its way downtown. I feel like that song comes up in my head or in discussion way more than I'd ever imagined that it would. I think today we're going to have the opportunity, you know, this is a great opportunity, to finish these interview questions. You know, and by the time we finish those, I'll be prepared for any kind of job interview that may come along. The question, no matter how stupid, will not throw me. Although I am very tempted, like, after reading these questions to just sort of, like, I'm very tempted if I ever receive these in a job interview to kind of just pack up and be like, you know, I don't think this is the job for me. This kind of question just doesn't, whatever. And I'll say this, you know, if somebody did that every time they were asked these kind of dumbass questions, they would go away, don't you think? Because the next time they went to interview people, they'd be like, maybe we should throw out this question, because that just seemed to cause us some trouble. We lost a candidate based on this question alone. Or, you know, I'm very tempted if it's like, what kind of tree are you, to just sort of be like, you know, I know that kind of question is designed to, like, see how I think and maybe draw out my personality a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on trees. So, what's the opposite of an evergreen? A tree that just looks dead from the outside all the time? And you have to dig a little bit to find the life barely hanging on beneath the surface? What is that tree? Great. Great. I always wonder, like, if I listened back to these shows, like, if I started at the beginning, you know, I'm imagining myself and I'm, like, 90 years old. And I'm thinking, like, you know, I recorded my first podcast like 60 years ago, and I still have all these files somehow. I always wonder if I, like, went back and listened to them, if I would find a trend of, like, depression getting worse or improving, or peaks and valleys. I mean, probably peaks and valleys, but I just wonder if the overall thing of it is, like, going up or down at any given time. It's hard to say, isn't it? I mean, as the person doing it, it's hard to say. I don't know. Maybe as a listener, it's like, oh, you've been going downhill for a long time. No doubt about it. So anyway, I think the last question we left off was that bullshit question about, like, if you won $10 million as you exited this office, what would you do? And I think the answer they want you to give is something like, oh my God, well, I would keep working because this really fulfills me. And of course, the real answer is, like, I mean, I would probably do you the courtesy of giving you a call, and I may be in a convertible at the time, so it might be hard to hear me, but I would like to think I'm the kind of person who would give you a call from the convertible screaming about, hey man, sorry about not coming in for the last 2 weeks, even though I know I just started. Kind of a no-call, no-show. Thing is, I won $10 million, like the same day of the interview, so, sorry, man. Peace out. I don't know if I'd even have the same phone number anymore. I feel like maybe if you become a millionaire, you know, I have this, like, notebook of eccentric millionaire plans, but I'm like, maybe I should make, like, a 10-thing checklist of, like, non-eccentric millionaire plans, like, actual, because I'm like, probably the first thing you should do is, like, change your phone number and get a new phone. Change your address, do all that shit, right? Because then you don't have people coming around, sniffing around, who you're just like, oh, it's fancy hearing from you for the first time in 10 years or something. Anyway, I should make that list. You know, call into work. Just have, like, a preset thing that, you know, you can push a button and it calls into work and is like, I'm not coming in. the really greedy way to do it would be to call in sick for work until they fired you and be like, well, I guess I'll use up this sick time. I've got like 4 months of sick time or something, so might as well go for it. But that just seems greedy. Okay, next. What do you think about when you're alone in the car? Oh, that's kind of an interesting question. I mean, if they were asking that in a job interview, I guess I would have to be like, I'm never really alone in the car because I'm usually podcasting. Because it just makes the time go a lot faster. Or, you know, I usually, if I'm not doing this, I'm listening to a podcast. I think it's just like, I try not to think too much alone in the car because that's not... Thinking for me is not, like, restful. It more turns into, like, oh, shit, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. As opposed to, you know, I wonder about this, or I wonder about that. So that's probably a terrible answer. I guess, though, you know what I would probably say, though, is something like, oh, I mostly, you know, I use the time in the car as an opportunity to sort of think about what remains of the day and what I have to do. And kind of stack it up into a top five. There was this lady who developed this productivity method, which is pretty simple. It's like, you know, write down all the things you have to do, pick out five, put them on a note card, and do those five things. And, like, I think the idea there is you're not spending any time thinking about what order to do which things in, and also... Five sounds like a very accomplishable number of things to finish. Like, if I'm like, all right, I got to put down five things on the list, and you don't finish five, you're like, Jesus Christ. And so, you know, there have been days like I'll have five projects to do at home, right? I'll put down, or I've always got more than five, but I'll put down five, and then I can usually finish them, and it doesn't take as long as you think. It's a great method. So that's probably what I'd say is, like, I try and kind of get to my five things, or if I've already accomplished some, I'll think about what's left and how I'm going to do it and whatever. I mean, usually the time, too, when I just have time to think is when I usually think about tasks I have or things that I'm working on, and then it's like a lot of problem solving. Like, when I'm in the shower, a lot of times I'm basically talking to myself, thinking about what I'm going to talk about on a podcast, or thinking about how a story I'm working on should go, or something like that. There's not a lot of downtime for Peter. I'll say that. Oh, if you could be any animal in the world, what animal would you be and why? I like how they include "and why" as if I might just answer that question, and then they're like, why? And I'm like, I don't fucking know, just because. Although it is stupid, because it's like a stupid question, right? It's like, what animal would you be? And I'm like, well, other than a person, I don't know. I mean, would I want to be... I always, like, have a problem with... I've kind of been working on this story in my head, and it's of somebody who goes to film, like, a Planet Earth-type documentary, you know, and they're watching some animal that's going to, like, kill this other animal, and they intervene, which seems to be, like, against the documentary thing, but this person's kind of like, fuck it. Probably because of something they experienced where they could have used a little help and no one helped them. Anywho. So, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be something that's like, these animals are often brutally killed by other animals and whatever. I mean, house cat seems all right. It seems kind of boring. It would depend on your owner, right? Because, like, some house cat owners are conscientious and play with their cats and keep them stimulated. Like, if I was one of these internet cats where it's like, the owner made this, you know, Raspberry Pi powered thing where I, like, it releases balls and then I have to find them. And then when I bring them back, I get a treat or something. I don't know. I don't know how much, or, you know, a dog. Dog seems pretty good. Like, a dog... Dogs that, you know, live good lives seem to live pretty good lives. People take them around in the car. I just read this article, which I was not super happy about, because it was about how it's okay to break a car window if there's a dog in a car and it's, like, hot outside. And I was sort of like, you know, here's, because my perspective on it is this. Like, so I work at the library, and every summer, probably like a couple times a week, someone will be like, there's a dog in a car out there. And, you know, our response is basically to tell them, like, if you think the dog is in distress, call the cops. You know, call the fire department, call whoever. And they're like, well, why don't you do it? And I'm like, I mean, I've been sitting in here. I didn't see the dog in the car. You saw the dog in the car. Why don't you do it? Be a grown-up. Why don't I be the grown-up when you can be the grown-up? I don't know. I don't have a great answer for that, but there you go. It's like, and people get really, they're really concerned about it, but really concerned that you do something about it. They're not really concerned. It makes it seem like they're not as concerned about the dog as they are about, like, you addressing their concern about the dog. Because it's like, I don't know, if I was somewhere and was like, hey, there's a dog out in a car, and someone's like, okay, well, you know, go ahead and call the police if you think the dog is in distress, I'd be like, okay, I will. I mean, okay, I have both sides on this. On the one hand, when it's hot outside, don't bring your dog in the car. You know what I mean? Don't let him be in the car. And it's like, if you can go without your dog, I mean, I know they like driving in the car, but it's like, if you're going to be inside for even 15 minutes, that's kind of a long time for them to just be out in the car and it's hot. So it's like, keep that in mind. But, you know, number two, like the other side, is just sort of like, hey, if you're really concerned, hang out with the dog for like 5 minutes. I mean, sit in your car, listen to an entire song, and if the dog is still there at that point, then do something. Because almost every time, I will tell you, when I'm called to go check on something in the parking lot along those lines, I get out there and the person is already headed out to the car. And I'm like, so for all I know, this person walked into the building, dropped some stuff in the book drop, and walked out. Which does not... that doesn't seem like a concerning event. You know what I mean? I would go so far as to say someone walking into the building, printing off like a boarding pass or some shit like that, and walking back out. I mean, that's a 10-minute chore. Probably not a big deal. You know what I mean? And they're always like, oh, I had water and like the air is on. I leave the car on with the air and like some water and stuff. And it's just like, you got to go so fucking far to be like, this dog's not in distress. And I'm like, have people not seen what a hot dog looks like? A hot dog. Get it? Have people not seen a hot dog? Because a hot dog, you know, it's panting like crazy. It's like lethargic and shit. And then when you see a dog and its mouth isn't even open and it's just kind of sitting there and it looks fairly alert, it's like, I think this dog is fine. You know what I mean? I get it. Like, no one wants to see a dog cooked in a car, but come on. Like, just, you know, let's use sense. Let's both sides use some sense. Don't leave your dog in the car if you're going somewhere. I know it's a pain in the ass, but you're out with your dog and then you're like, shit, I should run this errand. Go in the grocery store. And it's like, ah, it's going to take too long. Just take the dog home first. I know it's a pain in the ass, you know, just give yourself a pat on the back for being a great pet owner and taking your dog home. But, you know, I think dogs seem to have, for the most part, a pretty good life. They seem to get a lot of the perks of sort of modern lifestyle, you know what I mean? Climate control, I get to ride around in cars. I get to go for walks. I mean, you'd want to have at least a decent owner, so I guess it's a roll of the dice on that. But other than that, I don't know. Maybe a bear? That seems all right. They seem to have a pretty okay existence, as far as I can tell. Seem to not get fucked with a ton. I don't know. I don't know. It's like, it's hard to imagine, you know, someone even saying, like, a spider. Like, if I could be something for a day, and it's like, you're not going to get killed, you're not going to die. It's just you're going to sort of virtual reality experience being this other creature for a day. I might take something like a spider or a fish, because I'd be like, it's going to be so different, right? Poonmaster Flex was telling me this news story about, like, the world's oldest known spider died because it got stung by a wasp, which, first of all, I was like, well, wasps are assholes. Secondly, it was in Australia, which I was like, of course it is, because anything that's, like, snakes and spiders and deadly shit is, like, Australia. And, like, you know, it's... You talk about a spider and you're like, oh, those are terrible, and, you know, someone will be like, oh, it's not that, it's this you gotta watch for, which is also in Australia. There's no, like, there's no respite there. It's like, if you want to live a peaceful life in Australia, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. Be in a hot air balloon high above Australia? Never touch the ground? Be completely inaccessible? Live in a Jetsons house where there's, like, one pole that gets up to your house and it's high above the ground and the only way up the pole is, like, completely ringed in, horrible toxic chemicals and spinning blades and shit? I mean, that's all I can come up with. So... there you go. If I could be an animal, I'm like, I guess dog, but spider for the experience. What was the last gift you gave someone? It was Val's birthday, and I made her I got a wood burner, and I wood burned her a Burger Time cutting board. So it's got the character and a background and stuff like that. I like to do the kind of homemade gifts. I'm starting to understand now, like, you know, when you're a kid, and you make something for your mom in pottery class, and you're like, here's a thing for you. Great. And you're like, I can't believe she fucking fell for that again. You know, but now as an adult, I'm like, oh, I'm starting to see the kind of, like, upside of handmade or thoughtful gifts. I think that's the thing is, like, as an adult, you hand make a gift, it's more thoughtful. Because you're not just, like, trapped in a pottery class for an hour, and then you're just like, well, I made this thing, and I could just say it's for my mom. You know what I mean? So, as an adult, though, I can see, like, the excitement of receiving something like that. I think, too, it's, like, custom for you. Like, it's obviously not something... it's something that no one else has. And so I think that makes it a little nicer or more thoughtful or something. Mountains are really pretty today. P.S. What were you like in high school? I think I had two eras of high school, I'd say. I mean, I was pretty shy in high school. Definitely the first half. I mean, I had, like, two friends who I really talked to outside of class. I think I was not... I didn't get picked on or anything like that in high school. I think I was just very under the radar and just kind of... how I learned to live life as a child. I mean, I didn't remember having this discussion with my mom, but when I was pretty young and she was asking me how things were at my dad's, and I was like, I don't know, I just kind of stay, like, under the radar, you know, which is a pretty fucking weird thing for, like, a 7-year-old to say, but I think that was one of my survival tactics that definitely followed me into school. You know, I did not stand out as far as I know. I mean, in the last 2 years of school, I joined sports. You know, I did track and cross country, and that was pretty nice for me. Like, I made some friends. You know, I had something to do after school, like, more people to hang out with. I mean, it was pretty nice. I highly recommend. I think, you know, it's a good thing for kids, high school kids, teenagers, to have some kind of interest. Something that they're involved in outside of school. I don't even think it matters so much what it is, but I do think it's good if there's, like, at least a few people that they're doing it with. There's, like, these kids who come to the library all the time. They haul in a TV with them and play Smash Brothers on the GameCube. And everyone's like, oh, we should set up the projector or do this. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. They want to use this kind of TV because that's, like, the correct kind of TV. Our TVs would have too much lag and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, look, this is nerding shit. You just gotta just accept it. This is what it is. So they, you know, but there's like four or five of them who always come. And I'm like, well, see, that's good. They're friends. They're doing a thing together. They're committed to a thing together. It doesn't have to be like 50 people, but it's good if it's like more than one or two people. because I just think that that can lead to trouble. Because then you're like, well, when your one friend is being a dick, or your one friend, you know, gets a girlfriend or something happens, something's going to happen if you have one friend. And if you have one friend, then you're fucked. And you'll be like, okay, well, great. That's all I got. One friend is all I got. Da-dibba-dibba-dat. Ugh. See, now I'm trying to pass this. Okay. Well, that's boring. That's just whatever. What's the last thing you watched on TV, and why did you watch it? The last thing I watched on TV. I'm going to count, like, Amazon Prime and stuff like that, I guess, as TV, because I don't... I haven't had TV, since middle school? Elementary school? Like, no cable or anything like that? And I mean, like, never had it between those times. Pretty crazy. So the last thing I chose to watch was Justified, the FX series, which is on Amazon Prime. You can watch all 6 seasons. Why did I choose it? I'd started watching it before and was enjoying it, but, you know, I think that was when it was happening. So I saw maybe the first 2 seasons, and then nothing else was out since, you know, after that. No subsequent seasons were out yet. So then I just never went back to it. So I decided to go back, take care of some unfinished business. Like, 1 season from the end. Why did I choose to watch it? Well, I guess that's why. I guess I was enjoying it and wanted to finish it off. But, you know. I mean, why did I initially pick it? It seemed like a good show. I like these sort of action-y, you know, like The Shield or Sons of Anarchy or whatever. Like, sometimes they're stupid, and I accept that. But, you know, I don't know. It's, like, compelling and entertaining. And by compelling, I mean, like, it's definitely TV that's designed to keep you moving forward. And it's a lot of plot. You know, there's not a lot of, I mean, there's some, but the character development isn't, like, the big thing. The sort of language isn't the big thing. It's, like, it's just you want to see how are they going to get out of this one. You know what I mean? That's kind of the constant movement. And I think that's the thing. There's sort of constant movement. And also, you know, it's like that's how TV is now, right? It's not like the constant resetting every episode. You know, like you watch, like, The Simpsons. And, like, that's a great show, and I loved it. But, you know, it's... There's nothing preventing you really from watching a new episode. If you've seen the most of the episodes, you're like, all right, I got the concept, and it doesn't really build. That would be a really interesting thing for, like, something like The Simpsons to do, though. They're like, we want to kind of, like, refresh this, so we're going to try a season where you actually, the storylines go for an entire season. Like, we're going to make a long arc with jokes. I don't know if I've ever seen that done on a comedy show. You know, like, things will build on each other, or there'll be, like, references or jokes to other stuff, but I don't know if I've ever seen a comedy show where it, honest to God, was, like, super, super enhanced, or super, super necessary to have seen all the episodes prior to the one you're watching. I mean, Modern Family, you could kind of pick up wherever, I think. And you would miss out on some of the character introductions and shit, but it doesn't really matter. I don't know. Tell me something about your last job other than money that would have inspired you to keep working there. Huh. What would inspire me to keep working at my old job? Like, what would I want at my current job to inspire me to continue working there? Other than money. I think if I, like, the big thing for me... Oh, and I never got to the other thing. Hang on. So the big thing I think that would inspire me would be if I could have moved to a more... Basically doing less FaceTime. Whether that was, like, you can do 1 day a week work from home or half day a week work from home or something, or if that was something like, you know, we've worked out a system by which, hey, if you get a given amount of work done, you can go for the day. Something like that. I mean, it's, you know, I work in a place that's open a lot of hours. A lot more hours than a typical office or anything like that. Or, you know, a school or anything. And there have to be people there during those times, right? So there is, like, definitely an element of my job that is FaceTime oriented. But, you know, I would really like if we could move to a system of, hey, Peter, if you get a certain amount of work done, we figure out a way to sort of measure that out. And it's, you know, Thursday at 3 o'clock, you can go home. You know what I mean? Like, if you do a certain amount of shit, demonstrable, you can go. I think that would be something that, you know, or if it was like, I could go down to 32 hours with, and make the same money and everything, that would be pretty huge. I think it's, you know, it's about reclaiming time from work. So that would be a big one for me at work. Maybe like a long-term project that I was involved in with some level of control and authority that was interesting to me. I think that would also be, I think that would be something that might change things. You know, I would really like to do some supervision. I don't think a ton, but I wouldn't mind doing some supervision, because I think it would be a different angle for me and something like that. I think when I was last doing this, the question was like three things that are like you would ask for or whatever. No, I did cover this again, didn't I? Because I was saying how, yeah, okay. What is the funniest thing that has happened to you recently? I can't remember. See, we've been over some of these questions, but I'm not sure which ones. The funniest thing that happened to me recently. Shit. Probably at work when I was handed a needle completely full of heroin. By somebody. That was pretty funny. I mean, it wasn't funny. It was serious, but it wasn't ha-ha funny, but it was pretty odd, I guess. I thought that was pretty enjoyable in some way. I mean, it kept things interesting for an afternoon. And I think here's what was funny about it, is I only very briefly considered using the heroin. And not like, you know, because I am not like a drug guy. I'm not a drug user. I don't even like weed, and it's totally legal here. I mean, I feel like part of why I should leave Colorado is because I'm wasting a space for someone who really would enjoy weed. But then part of me too is like, you know, I'm glad weed is legal and I don't think weed is the devil. But on the other hand, like, people who are really into weed are fucking annoying, man. Like, really fucking annoying. If weed is like one of your favorite things, if you're into weed, if you're like, oh yeah, if you spend a significant amount of money on like pipes and shit, I don't know, man. I'm not sure if you're a cool dude, okay? Cool dudes smoke weed from time to time, but it's not a lifestyle for them. I don't know why I'm like real into this whole thing, but like, it seems like one of my life things is I really encourage people to have interests and do things, but I'm like, don't make it your whole life, man. Stuff like weed, I guess, you know, seems like a silly thing to devote your life to. Because really, you're just devoting your life to, like, being checked out, right? I mean, which is fine. We all need to be checked out sometimes. But to have your life sort of be about that seems kind of crazy. So anyway, I got that needle. And, like, I took it to my office, and then I was like, what the fuck should I do with this? You know what I mean? Because the lady was like, this lady comes up to me, and she's like, I'm a drug counselor, and I've helped a lot of people kick addiction and stuff. And I didn't see she had this needle. And I was like, why is this lady telling me this? Like, is she a, you know, this happens at my work a lot. People will tell you a preface and then tell you what they actually want. You know, and it'll be something like that. It'll be like, you know, oh, I used to work in an umbrella factory and blah, blah, blah. Where's your bathroom? And you're like, okay. I don't know what those things had to do with each other, but here we are. And so something like that'll happen pretty frequently. So when she's telling me about this, I'm thinking, where's this going? Like, I wonder what her question's going to be. But then her question turned out to be, I found this needle, and it's heroin, and, you know, can I have a trash can to throw it away? And I was like, okay, so she was sharing her bona fides with me. She was being like, hey, I actually know this is heroin. I'm not just some idiot who freaks out and sees a diabetes needle or something and is, like, panicked. And it was full. So, you know, I was like, oh, you know what? I'll take it and get rid of it. Because I didn't want to just throw it in the trash. It was capped. The needle was capped, which is good news. It's so funny, too, because, like, okay, I tell people about this story and everyone's like, you shouldn't touch it. You shouldn't do this. You should do that. And I'm like, listen, motherfuckers, like, this is the scenario I'm in. It wasn't like I chose to go pick up a needle off the ground and do this and do that. I was like, it was handed to me. And, you know, people are like, well, you didn't touch the metal part, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not like a fool. I understand. It's not like I'm playing with a dart at a bar and I'm like, oh my God, I touched the metal part. What the fuck? It's like, I understand this is a needle and a great way to get a disease, like a really bad one. But anyway, so I was like, how do you get rid of this? Because I was like, I guess I could just throw it out, but that seems like a bad idea. You know, and then I was like, well, maybe I should like dispose of the heroin somehow. You know what I mean? I was like, how does one do that? So I was looking online. It turns out there's not a ton of resources for how to get rid of like liquid heroin. I'm guessing this is because most people are like, how do you get rid of heroin? You use it and have a great time, you know. I don't think it comes up a lot where someone who is not using heroin has heroin to get rid of, right? I'm sure it comes up, but I bet it doesn't come up a ton. This is like the sort of interesting slash frustrating thing about my job, is it's like a lot of things like this that you'd be like, I never thought. I can't tell you how many times I've heard, like, I never thought of the library as having to deal with that. And I'm like, listen, here's what we are. We're basically a microcosm of the entire world. So, like, anything that anyone deals with anywhere, we've probably dealt with in some fashion. And, you know, especially things like drugs or homelessness or developmentally disabled adults and things that are, like, tricky situations from time to time. So anyway, I looked up and it was like, you know, okay, you can put, like, liquids you can add to cat litter because that basically makes it unusable and then throw it away. And I was like, all right, we have Devour, which is this powder, you know. You know how when you were in school, probably the last time most of you saw this was like in elementary school and some kid throws up in class and then the janitor sprinkles this powder on the vomit that kind of turns it into a solid or a gel and then sweeps or vacuums it up? Well, we have that, which I immediately hit on because I've used it enough times to know. And so I was trying to like squirt it into there. But the needle was blocked or something was wrong with the syringe and I couldn't get it out. And so, like, I tried taking the back off the syringe to dump the liquid out, but it was stuck in there too. And I was like, has this turned into a gel or something? Like, what is happening? So anyway, I just kind of buried the whole thing in Devour in a Tupperware and threw it away because I was like, that is the best I can do. So I think the funny part, though, was just when I had the brief thought of, this is the kind of person I am. I mean, was there any chance I was actually going to use this heroin? No, there wasn't. But I'm the kind of person who thinks about what would happen if I did. Or, you know, maybe it's sort of like, you know, I would never rob a bank. But if someone basically handed me a sack full of money and then vanished, and I was like, no one is ever going to know what I do with this sack full of money. That's a different question than would I rob a bank, right? I mean, we all see the difference there. And so that's kind of the situation I was in. It wasn't a matter of like, would you ever use heroin? It was like, if someone handed you a bunch of heroin, would you just throw it away? Turns out the answer is yes. I had to fill out an incident report, you know, where we, like, when we have an incident, we report it. And I didn't even think about that at first. And then I was like, I better do that. Because, like, what if this lady is like, hey, I handed a heroin needle to the guy who was working here. Whatever became of that? And everyone's like, we've never heard of that. And then I'm like, I never, you know, I didn't think it was a big deal. Because I didn't think it was, like, a big deal, but whatever. And, you know, then I'm in court and they're playing this podcast where it's like, so you considered using heroin? And I was like, I mean, not really. You know, I considered that this would be probably the most, I'll call it the best opportunity to use heroin that I would ever have in my life, which is literally being handed a loaded needle by a stranger. And by best opportunity to use heroin, I mean, you know, the best opportunity from a field of no other opportunities to do that. This is the best, but that's not saying a lot, right? So that's the funniest thing that happened to me lately. That's probably not a great tale to tell, but I don't know. I might tell the first part about the lady telling me about her background before telling me what the thing was, just to sort of talk about, like, being patient and understanding. And oh, I'm so patient. What do you want to be when you grow up? That's a dumb question. Retired. That's what I want to be. I want to be a tired, curmudgeonly, oldish man. I don't know if I'm so much the get off my lawn type of guy, but just the sort of, like, I don't understand these Snapchat filters, you know what I mean? That kind of curmudgeon. Like, just sort of, I don't know what the big deal is about this and that. And people these days are just so obsessed with things that don't matter. So maybe a curmudgeonly, you know, you could look at it a couple ways. A curmudgeon, but you could also look at it as someone with perspective. So there you go. Pretend you are CEO. What three concerns about the firm's future keep you up at night? Oh my god. Well, I guess it would depend what the firm was, right? But I think that, like, I would summarize any concern about anything as, you know, there's always something from the past, something from the present, and something from the future. So there's always something from the past that keeps you up at night, because it's something that you're like, I could have done that differently, or, like, whatever. I don't know if it's so much stuff that I'm like, oh, this is going to come back to bite me, as it's just like, I don't know. We all remember those times, right? And the memories for that seem like nighttime is the perfect time for that kind of shit. You remember something out of nowhere. Something just triggers this memory of, like, something you did that was dumb, like, in middle school. And you're just, like, so embarrassed by it still. And you know nobody else in the world remembers. But you remember. So I think that there's always something from the past. There's always something from the present, which is, like, I'm calling the present, like, the week you're in, including, like, the upcoming days and stuff. I think there's always going to be something in that category that's, like, keeping you up because it's, you know, a concern at the time. It doesn't even have to be, like, a bad thing. It's just a thing that's on your mind keeping you up. And then the future, and I think the future is always, like, a concern with anything. It's kind of like, what is this going to be in 5 years? What is this going to be in 2 years? You know what I mean? How is this going to work? Is this going to still be a thing in 2 years? We were talking about, I mean, we've been talking a lot about libraries. We're talking about, you know, idea labs or maker spaces and that kind of thing. And it seems like a little bit of a trend that's maybe hasn't quite topped out yet, or it's topped out, but it hasn't gone into the valley. Because, you know, I think a lot of libraries put a lot of steam into that. And then steam, get it? Like STEM, steam. You know what I hated? So you've got STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And it was like, we need to concentrate on STEM education. And then someone's like, let's do STEAM, because then it's got art in there. And it's like, okay. And then someone's like, let's do STREAM, because then it has reading. And I was just like, well, I think the whole point of this STEM thing was to kind of say, like, here are the areas in which we're falling short education-wise. And so, like, let's focus on those for a little while, or, like, let's find other ways to teach these kinds of things. And then everyone's like, yeah, but let's put art and reading in there, too. And it's like, okay. I don't think those things are unimportant. I just think it's sort of like, well, what's the point of having STREAM when you're like, so literally everything you do in school, other than, like, athletics or something. I mean, it's kind of stupid, if you ask me. It's like, okay, so let's just go back to calling it school again. It's like, we're a STREAM-focused school, and it's like, so what are you not focusing on then? You're like, we don't really focus on lunch. We have a very tight focus that only encompasses every academic class that you could take at any educational institution. Nothing else. Okay? I'm not making up new classes. Oh, speaking of new classes, so Poonmaster Flex has a coworker who's in a HESOL program. So this is like a program that basically you get a master's degree that enables you to work in a lot of... It basically is a program to create more people to work at colleges and universities in, you know, different roles. Not necessarily as a teacher, but as, like, other support and administrative and, you know, staff-type roles, right? And so she... This person, who is Poonmaster Flex's friend, is, you know, was an immigrant from Mexico. She was not here legally, but she did marry her husband, and so she's legal now. And, like, that was a big thing for them, because she was like, I don't want you to marry me because, you know, so I'm legal or whatever. And he's like, we're getting married because I love you. And they've had a couple kids and all this. This is, you know, long in the past. And she's a mom. She works in higher ed right now. Like, she's doing the thing, and then she's taking the classes to get the degree to, you know, advance her career and whatnot. And there's a lot of things that happen in these classes that make her very frustrated because she thinks they're kind of bullshit. She had, like, two classes in a row, so it's, you know, a fairly small program, so you get to know the people. And she dropped one class because there was this other student in it who she'd had in a class before and was just, like, constantly disruptive, would often leave class because, you know, this person was upset. And, like, this person, you know, would talk a lot about, like, oh, there's kind of a power imbalance here between the students and the instructor. And the instructor would be like, well, let's talk about it, instead of being like, I mean, I'm the instructor and you're the student. Yeah, there's a power imbalance. Sort of like someday you'll have a boss and there will be a power imbalance there. You know, deal with it. I don't know. So she signed up for this other class and then dropped it almost immediately because she was like, I don't know if I can do this. And the reason is it was like a quick summer course. It was like a 9-week course or something. And it was about white privilege was what the class was about. And the professor instructor person sent out an email before the class started that was like, you know, I'm excited to explore this topic with all of you. And before we get started, I just wanted to say a couple things. And one of them was like, you know, I don't know, some basic housekeeping thing. And the second one, I'm going to say this as close as I remember it. And I swear to you, this is not me making it worse. This is like all honesty, which is like, for those of you who are joining us in the class and are white, in order to take this class, you need to admit that as a white person, you are racist. I am not fucking kidding. That's what it said. And so, like, if you're white and in the class, you have to admit that you're racist. But if you're not white, then you don't. And so then this individual, Poonmaster Flex's friend, was like, I don't know about this. You know, like, this doesn't seem right. Because she was like, well, for one thing, it's saying, like, well, white people are racist and other people are not. You know, and if you're going to take this class, you have to admit, you know, you have to basically claim racism and be like, I'm racist, and then you can be in the class. But, you know, if you're another race, you don't have to do that. But the other thing is, her husband is like a white dude who married an illegal immigrant, and like they have children together and they have like a loving relationship and whatever. And she's like, I mean, he might be racist, but he's not more racist than I am. You know what I mean? Like, it was just really fucked up. I was like, that's a really fucked up thing. And also, it's like, okay, we're going to do this class about white privilege. And it's like, I know going into it that this person, this instructor, is basically like, white people are racist. And I would admit, I would say, like, I think all people are racist. If, you know, if we're calling racist being like, we have sort of preconceived things, some which are even subconscious, that are race-based. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think everybody's got that. I think everyone's got it and whatever. But I think it's really different to have this sort of idea in your head and then to act on it. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if you were someone who wanted to go vegetarian for animal welfare reasons, I think that's totally valid and not a bad thing to do at all. But it's like, hey, sometimes you want to eat meat, like you have the desire to, but you know, you're like, I'm not going to. Like, I want to, or, like, there's part of me that wants to, and it just kind of, it comes up from time to time, and then I say, no, that's not what I'm doing, and then I don't do it. It's that simple. I mean, it's like, and to me, it's kind of the same thing. It's just like, well, yeah, if you've eaten meat your whole life, your parents, you know, fed you meat stuff, and now you're going vegetarian, it's like, there's gonna be times where you'll probably want to eat meat. I mean, it seems likely, right? So I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know how I got on that topic. That was like a little ranty. But anyway, it's just like, this is fucking bullshit. But I was also glad that, you know, that's why I wasn't. I'm kind of glad I'm not a student right now, because it just seems like, it seems difficult. And this is based on what I've heard from this friend of Poon Master Flex, you know, who I quite like. And it's been difficult for her because she's torn between these two worlds. She's like existed in the real world of work. I don't mean to be insulting and say the real world. I just mean she's existed in the world of work and, you know, being a parent and doing all these things, and then is going to these classes where she's, you know, learning what people think about these various aspects of life, but, you know, kind of having to reconcile that in her head. A lot of the times what people are saying about it, she's like, that's the uninformed opinion of someone who has gone straight from high school into this program and has never, you know, lived in the real world. And so, anyway. It just makes me glad I'm not a student, I guess. And I'm just kind of like, I don't really care what colleges do. I'm like, that's your problem. I don't know. Okay, those are the three. This is the question about three promises. If you don't get this job, what's your backup plan? I mean, the good news for me is that I have a job. So I don't need a job. I mean, I do, because I need to make a move, and I do want a different job, but, you know, I'm not screwed. It's actually really great to be in that position, because then you don't have to take anything you don't want. I mean, it sucks when you're applying for jobs and you have no job. This is a situation I've not been in for a long time, because I've gone from job to job, like, most of my life. And haven't had long periods of unemployment, but for the most part, I remember doing this a lot in the summer when I was younger, especially when you're like 15, 16, and you just apply fucking everywhere. And it's sort of like, what's your backup plan if you don't get this job? And you're like, I don't know. You know, it's one thing that I wonder is still true and suspect is still true. When you apply, like when they bring you in for an interview at like McDonald's or Pizza Hut, I think you pretty much got that job bagged. It's kind of weird. Like, it seems like, weirdly, those sort of industries are more like, let's just bring in people for interviews that we actually want. And then also, we're basically just doing an interview to suss out anyone who it's like, okay, we do not want that person. It's not like as much of a competitive process, maybe. I don't know how to put it. Also, I think I applied to McDonald's like 5 or 6 times. Like, it's kind of weird how badly I wanted that job. But I really did, because I was just like, I wanted a job, and I knew they hired people who were 15. And so I applied there a bunch of times. And basically what it came down to is one of the times I went in, I filled out the application, and the manager was there and was just like, can you come in for an orientation on this day? And I was like, yes. And he's like, okay, let's do it. And I was like, okay, great. I don't know. Simpler times, huh? For Pete. So what's my backup plan? I mean, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. Basically, just keep living life the same way, I guess. And keep going. If I didn't have a job, what's the backup plan? I mean, applying for jobs sucks ass. And it sucks ass because it's a ton of work. And it's totally unpaid, unfun work. You know, like, writing, I don't get paid for that, really. I mean, I get some pay for some of it, but not for the most part, I don't. Buy Ghostick, private detective on Amazon. But, like, I don't get paid a lot for that, but it's enjoyable, and it's a choice, right? But applying for jobs is, like, there's nothing enjoyable about it. And it's just like, oh, and you just got to get on there and, like, fillet everybody. And you got to, you know, if you're really doing it and you're, like, doing a cover letter, you got to, like, look up the organization's, like, mission statement and look at the job description in a lot more detail and stuff. By the way, if I was going to say some advice to people who are posting job descriptions and stuff, tighten that up. Okay, I don't need to know every single detail. And, like, sometimes I read through every single detail of this very long job description, get to the end, and I'm sort of like, I still don't exactly know what this person's doing all day. You know what I mean? Like, I have no idea what my day-to-day looks like after reading this job description. And so that, it seems like a poorly written, it's like for HR, I guess, so they can decide, like, how much to pay people. But I'm sort of like, dude, I mean, come on, give me a break. Like, can you tell me anything about this actual job, for Christ's sake? So, you know, the backup plan when you're applying for jobs and you don't have a job is, well, I've already got 3 other applications in. It's a lot like submitting a piece of writing to a literary magazine, and someone's like, what are you going to do if you don't get this in this magazine? And it's like, well, the second I get your rejection, I send it to somebody else. End of story. I mean, that's all there is to it. I'm just going to assume that this wasn't the right place for me, this wasn't the right fit, and do the next thing. I mean, you just got to do the next thing. It's sort of like the movie 8 Mile. There's this part. So the very end is, like, really interesting because, so, you know, he's going to these rap battles, right? And he's, like, getting his ass kicked all the time because he's got stage fright or whatever. And he finally goes this one night and is victorious, and, like, everyone's like, we gotta celebrate and blah blah blah, and he's like, they're like, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to work. Like, he's going back to his shitty job that sucks, you know, but he got this shitty job that sucks, but at least he can make some money. And he's kind of like, you know, hey, I won this thing tonight, but that doesn't do, I still need this job, like, I still need this life. So I think that's kind of how I feel. That was, like, a very real moment of, like, he has this small victory, and they immediately scale it, where they're like, okay, let's realize this was a small victory he had one time and is not going to change his life. So anyway, it was a very mature moment in a movie. So that's what you got to do, man. You don't get the job, you got to go to the next job. Lick your wounds and go to the next thing. Teach me something I don't know in the next 5 minutes. Fuck. What is the best thing I could teach someone in 5 minutes? With, like, nothing in hand. What's something I know a lot about? Well, okay, I would probably teach something about writing. I would give, like, a bunch of little rules and be like, okay, here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to teach you how to write a compelling article for people in the next 5 minutes. It's not going to guarantee your success in doing it, but I can give you some rules. And I want you to think about these rules as like restrictions that make you better at doing this in the future. So, you know, this might not immediately make your thing you're working on awesome, but as you work on these in the future, if you kind of work under these restrictions, you'll be better someday. Give us the important, exciting shit right away. Don't hide it. If you're writing an article that's like a list or something like that, make your intro as short as possible. Like, get to the meat of the thing as quickly as you can. Because, you know, when someone comes to see the top 10 whatever, they don't want to hear a long preface about it. When I say the top 10 classic novels written by women, it doesn't need a lot of preface. Like, you've got it. And on that note, let your title do some of the lifting. If you can replace an introduction to your article with a title, do it. And just jump right in. I would say shorter is always better. Like, in today's world, I can't speak to the world of the past, but the world of the current is faster is better. The more you can cut out of it, the better. The shorter you can make it, the better. And I would say cut things out of it until you're starting to feel like, until you've cut some stuff you really wanted to leave in and some stuff you really think should be in there. And once you start doing that and you've cut some of that, then you're probably getting to the right length. You know what I mean? Cut some stuff out that you're like, man, this would still be good in here, but it'll be shorter without it. It's not enough to cut the things that you don't necessarily need or that make for a trimmer story. It's like, cut it down so that I'm almost left wanting more of this. 'Cause that's always, always, always better than someone reading an article and being like, I could have done with less. What else would I say? Be voicey. I think it's good to have a voice in an article. A lot of people will discourage that, you know, a lot of sites and things will discourage you from having a voice, but I think that's what makes, I think that's what's the point of having you do it as opposed to someone else, is that it's your voice doing it. If they didn't want you, if they don't need your voice in there, if they don't want it to be voicey, then let someone else do it. I mean, that's not the thing for you. That's another thing I'd say, is be choosy about what you do. Try and get into a position where you can be choosy and you don't need to do things that you're not interested in. I think that causes a lot of strife for people, is they're writing articles or writing about topics that they have no interest in or don't know much about. Has this been like 5 minutes? You know, read it out loud to yourself after you finish too. Read it out loud and think about it. And, you know, try and do like 3 or 4 a month. Because if you do 3 or 4 a month, even if they don't get published anywhere, it gets you used to being on a deadline. It gets you a nice back catalog of stuff you can, you know, sell off somewhere else. I mean, it's the way to go. How's that? Is that good? Geez. What are you known for? You know, I think at work I'm known in a couple different ways. I think by people who don't like working with me, I'm known for being like rebellious and kind of leap before you look a little bit. Which I would say, I don't think I'm rebellious. I think that I'm just sort of, well, my take on it is that I'm willing to do things against the rules if the rules would prevent the thing from working. Or if the rule doesn't really make sense in a context, or if the rule, I usually understand the rules, and I usually consider the rules before I break the rules. But sometimes there's a rule that I understand why it exists and why the person put it in place, but have to, if I'm looking at it honestly, I have to say, you know, this doesn't really make sense in this context. It doesn't make sense for this rule to be in place, and it doesn't really make sense for me to abide by this rule at this time. So I'm going to go against it. I think that's the thing, is like, they would see it as rebellion. I think people who don't like working with me see me as somebody who enjoys breaking the rules, you know, and like thinks of himself as fucking, you know, I'm Han Solo or some shit. And I'm like, no, man, it's not that at all. It's just that I'm somebody who is, I'm not afraid to examine the rules and say, you know what? This is dumb. This doesn't make sense. I'm not afraid to, I don't follow a rule just because it's the rule, you know, except in rare occasions where I'm like, the rule is the rule. Like, let's say the law, you know, generally I follow the law, even if I think it's dumb, but I think that the flip side of that, people who like working with me would say that I'm willing to take a risk here and there, and that, if I'm on your team, if, you know, we're working together, I'm willing to go to bat for things. You know, I'm very willing to say what I think is right and, you know, fight, I guess, a little bit. Or I'm willing to have those conflicts. I think I work in a very conflict-averse environment. But the problem is that causes way worse conflict because then conflicts boil over rather than being sort of allowed to express over time slowly. Man, I'm at a total standstill right now. Denver is so crazy crowded these days. I saw someone online was like, where can I go that's like Denver 10 years ago? And they were like, Kansas City, Cincinnati, Boise. And I was like, Denver 10 years ago does sound like a pretty good deal. Like, Denver now is just it's too much. There's too many fucking people here. Like, there's so many people here. I think there is, you know what one of the undersold effects of the marijuana legalization? Like, everyone was like, oh my God, you're going to have a bunch of junkies, or you're going to have these problems or whatever. And it's like, I haven't experienced any of that. But what I have experienced is, like, lots of dude bros come to the area. You know, I think it's a lot of people who are like, I mean, you get a bunch of fucking idiots who are deciding where to go to college. And for them, they're like, well, I could go to, you know, Delaware or Connecticut or Colorado. And they're like, weed is legal in Colorado, right? Let's go there. And I'm like, God damn. God damn. And it's like, well, who would make that decision? And you're like, exactly the kind of person that, you know, you don't want to live in an apartment next to. And there's totally that person. That person totally exists. And there's a lot of that person. So anyway, what's the most interesting thing about you that we wouldn't learn from your resume alone? What's the most interesting thing about me? I think that probably you would never figure out from my resume, but like, I'm very interested in thought experiments. And also experimentation in general. But, you know, I feel like low-risk experimenting is always a good choice. And whenever someone has an idea and they're like, I want to try this out, I'm very likely to say yes, or some version of yes that's like, is there a way we can do it that's lower stakes? You know, someone's like, I want to try an experiment where we do these writing classes at, you know, we offer writing classes and we do this and that. And I'm very likely to say yes to that, but, you know, very likely also to say something like, you know, I know you want to do this and here's what you've suggested. Is there any way we could do this and offer, can we do it 3 times instead of 7 and see what happens? You know, I'm very like, let's see what happens kind of person. That's just how I roll. That's embarrassing, isn't it? That's how I roll. But that's just how I feel about things. I'm very like up for that and just want people to put a realistic effort, and I want it to be a good effort, because otherwise the experiment is kind of pointless, because it'll be like, well, we didn't really try. But I do want people to try things, and I want things to be different and better. And when people have ideas of how to do that, I think it's like, hey, let's try it. I'm very open to being like, eh, fuck it, let's try. That's, I think, the important thing to say here is I'm very much a fan of, well, we've got nothing to lose. And being realistic, too, about if we've got nothing to lose, let's do it, you know. Here's how I would sum it up. I'm much more of a why not person than a why. So if someone approaches me with something, I'll probably ask why not. And if there's nothing compelling there, then I'm like, all right, cool, let's do it. As opposed to being like, why should we do that? Because I think when you ask why, it forces people, you know, it immediately kind of says that you're like, I don't think we should do this and you need to convince me. But that's not how I feel. I feel like, well, I don't have a good reason not to do this, so fuck it, let's go for it. Why not? So I don't know. That's something that would be interesting about me if you're asking me for a job. Don't send this to an employer, please, unless you think they're going to hire me. Jesus Christ. What do you work toward in your free time? Finishing a book that I'm writing. That's probably the biggest project. Lit reactor stuff. I don't know if I'd consider that free time. I mean, that's a job. Reading. I try and read more. I've been trying to read a lot more. It's kind of interesting. I've been trying to read a lot more because, you know, in anticipation of moving. And I'm like, I got all these fucking books that I've bought over the many years. And I'd like to read them and sort of get away from having to move them all again. Because Jesus Christ, you move them enough times and you're like, fuck it. Never moving these again, you know? So, I think that's like a big thing for me. It's just sort of like trying to get away from that and reading more. And, you know, it's like, it's a good thing too. It's a good thing to be like, it's not like, I do also have like a bunch of bottles of booze that I've moved a few times that I'm sort of like, maybe I should get rid of these. Cause you know, I'm just like, how many times are you going to move these same bottles of booze before you're like, okay, you don't seem super interested in these, Pete. But, you know, so that would be one thing, right? If I was like, you know what I should do is work towards drinking all this booze before I move. Because it's like, I mean, I should. I probably should try and do that. Because it's like, how many times are you going to move the same bottle of Crown Royal? Don't you love when you go down a street and it's like really tight and the other person is taking up way too much space? And you're just like, come on, buddy. We're both in this. We're in this together. Anyway, these are like noble goals, right? It's good things to try and do with my life. I don't know if I'd say I'm doing it with my life, but doing it. What else? What else do I have? What else do I have in this empty, empty life? That might be about it. Jeez. Well, we've got a few more, but I guess we'll see if we get to them, because I'm here, and this is a long enough episode for sure. So, till next time, I have been and will remain Pete. See you later, guys.